Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 241. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Mr. Smooth Jazz himself, Tim Elliott.
I'm feeling in a madman sort of way today.
And Graham, it was a dark and stormy night, thickens.
Hey, that's lounge music, baby.
You got
it. I love lounge music.
And our buddy Phil had to be off again this week, and we expect to see him next week or hear him next week. And anyway, so lots going on.
Steve, you went down to that thing for Verizon the other day, right?
Yeah, at the Mall of America. Boy, are they they're really maximizing their press footprint with that. This stuff is all over the place. But yeah, I did a post on Minivate. I'll put a link in the show notes. Julio Ojeda Zapata did one too for TwinCities.com. That was pretty comprehensive. And it's a pretty interesting store. The thing that I keep coming back to, and I alluded to this a little bit in the post, but what I keep coming back to is what's their value added strategy? It's one thing to have different solution areas and be able to sell stuff, but what are they bringing to the party that's different than what somebody could do with just buying it, at Best Buy or through Amazon?
Well, it looks like they've got a lot of accessories and you can make your own case and all that stuff. So that's somewhat
different. Very cool. I think that's cool. Yep.
But for a carrier to do a store like that, you just kind of have to wonder how much they're going to have to sell out of that thing. It sounds like it's enormous.
It's almost 10,000 square feet. So it's a huge store. I mean, it's worth going into. It's at number 286 in the Mall of America if you want to go see it.
So is it on the same side that the Microsoft and the Apple store are?
No, it's on the second floor, and it's a little bit of about one hallway down from on the east side from the Apple store and the Microsoft store. But still, it's pretty impressive. One thing that I thought was interesting was one of the articles that I read. The reporter was talking about the struggles that all the carriers are having now trying to differentiate themselves, that for the most part, the networks are relatively, the same, they're on parity and yes, Verizon would argue that and AT&T would argue that. And I'm not sure Sprint and T-Mobile would, but, do you guys see that too, that they're having a tough time, one-upping each other?
Well, My experiences in either AT&T or T-Mobile stores are not the greatest. I mean, if they can come up with a better experience, which shouldn't really be all that hard. And the thing that really bugs me is those things are never staffed enough. You go in there and you got to stand around with your thumb in your ear waiting for somebody,
Yep.
I've waited as long as 20 minutes or even half an hour, I think, in one case, in a T-Mobile store. AT&T's are better. They're bigger. The biggest T-Mobile store I've ever been in is maybe, 1,500, 2,000 square feet.
Right.
AT&T's like at Southdale, what used to be a pretty big store, but I don't enjoy going into either one of those places. So, obviously they're trying to create an enjoyable experience that has a lot more to look at, a lot more available, and God, I hope it's staffed properly. I'm sure it will be.
They have
when they're open.
They have 71 people tied to that store, so that's a huge number of people.
They're going to make a ton of money there too. I mean, the sales per square foot in MOA are probably going to be way better than any other location where they are now. But they pay dearly for it too.
Well, the one thing that I talked about in this post and also zeroed in on a bit with the CTO or the CIO, excuse me, of Verizon Wireless was the home on the and on the go area, where they had a lot of different point solutions like Belkin's Wemo and the Nest thermostat and so forth, and And I said to him, I said, well, you know, so if I came in and bought one of each, I'd have to have six different smartphone apps to run the things. And he goes, yeah, well, you know, and he did a bit of a humma, but then kind of alluded to the fact that they were going to watch this very closely to see what consumers responded to and what the demand was. And, you know, I'm seeing the same thing at Best Buy, because I was really impressed when I went into the Eden Prairie store this past Sunday. I got there about 15 minutes early because I just left. They were going to open at 10 o'clock, and I got in the car and started driving out of the garage and realized it was 20 to 10 and it was going to take me 4 minutes to get over there. So I get over there and they'd already opened, because the GM had said, hey, come, you know, there's people in the lot, open the doors. And I went in, and yes, they're stocked for the holiday season, but it was a pretty impressive array of product, and the people are getting more savvy. They're not savvy enough in my view, but they seem to know more. They're better trained on product. All of this, I think, is pretty positive. Tim, you follow Best Buy a lot. I mean, are you seeing that too?
Yeah, no, they seem to have turned a corner. They're making money again. They put in place, you know, price matching so that they can try to ward off the showrooming that people really thought was going to kill them. And there's still people that are questioning their, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to get through this holiday season, because it's going to be a tough one. It's a week less than normal. There's heavy discounting, so their profits will be down if they're able to, you know, get volume through the store. So it's still going to be very difficult for them, but they've made all the right moves, and you know, they're all set up for a good holiday if they can get people to come in and buy stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's an article today on the Strib. I'll stick a link in the show notes about Target. Analyst expectations for Target this fall, holiday season, are not good. They stumbled a bit in Canada. Their margins are way down. And I mean, do you think that this is really an impact from online e-commerce?
Target's in a slightly different business than Best Buy is, because they have to compete with grocery stores and other big box retailers like Walmart. And it's a little bit different than a specialty store like a Best Buy, where, you know, they're competing mainly with online, you know, with Amazon specifically. So, you know, they've got a different set of challenges than a place like Target, where, you know, they just need to get people in the door and get people to, you know, go there and buy their groceries as well as their other stuff.
Right.
And not go to Walmart, where, you know, if you look at the pricing on the same goods, Walmart's actually cheaper than Target is on most non-sale items. So, yeah, you know, once people get beyond that, it's kind of a tough deal for them. So, you know, I think they also have to try to reinvent themselves, and they're doing some interesting things with their Cartwheel app. You know, they've rolled out free Wi-Fi in all their stores here locally. I'm not sure how many across the country, but you go in, there's free Wi-Fi, and it connects with their apps, and they're doing some things to try to, you know, connect that online experience and use mobile apps as a way to sell more products and you know, give people incentives to go into the store.
I was surprised to see what a low percentage online is for them of their sales. I thought I read 2.3% is all.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that, but they, you know, they're trying to get back after having some pretty major snafus in their online after getting off the Amazon platform. And, you know, they had a big crash. How long ago was that? That might have been a year or two ago now. But they really aren't that big a player online yet. They've got a lot to do there.
Well, and you know, this is one of the things that, since my wife was a buyer at Target, you know, we talk about this kind of stuff a lot. And plus, when we, you know, are at dinner parties with old Targeteers and current Targeteers and all that, we have these discussions. But it's about the brilliance of how they merchandise, and how they do the end caps around the racetrack. The racetrack is the big aisle that goes in a square around the store. And how they moved clearance items to the back end cap so that now there's an incentive for people to walk down the back aisle. And it gets people to go up and down aisles, and they do a lot more impulse shopping. And, you know, it's the old joke where, yeah, I went into Target to get shampoo and I came out and I spent $200. How the hell did that happen? You know, but you're in there and it's like, oh yeah, I need one of those. Oh yeah, that's right. I needed one of those. Oh yeah, 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 that's right. And you keep throwing stuff in your cart pretty soon. It's like, what? Yeah. And I think Target is having a really hard time doing what Amazon has done brilliantly, which is to have a recommendation engine, you know, that people that bought things like this bought this, and here are things that you've looked at in the past. And now that you're looking at this, here are some recommendations, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I have a story about that personalized site. They were working on site personalization, right? Where your version of the site would be tailored to you. I had read about that. I happen to know someone who was hired into the team that was working on that. And she was part of the cut that they did four or five months ago. They lopped off a whole bunch of people in the marketing or online group. So I don't know what that says. Does that mean the personalized site thing has been put on hold or what, you know? But she was kind of a rock star employee and had been at Digital River and is now looking for a new home.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, little anecdote there.
yeah.
But they do, you know, they're world-class merchandisers in store. There's no doubt about that. But, man, they are spread thin, you know, and with Canada and trying to do so many things on so many fronts. But online is the place to watch, I think. What's coming there.
Hey, good news, by the way. Julio Hueda Zapata, who is going to be on today, but went to the Xbox One launch at midnight last night to cover it for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, just pinged me, and he can actually get on. So I'm going to add him to the call real quick. And so that'll be good to get him on. We can, even though we've already talked about the Verizon store, get him on to chat. Julio?
Hey, how's it going?
Good morning. Good morning. We already went by Verizon store, but we're still talking about Minnesota stories, and I know we want to talk about.
You guys hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yep.
Great.
Yeah, so Julio, you posted some video on your Google Plus on that opening last night. It looked like there's a lot of people there at the Microsoft store.
Yeah, when I got there, what I found was unexpected. I expected, you know, people to be lined up outside still. What Microsoft did, which was kind of smart, was just invite everybody inside, make a big party of it. They had music and pizza and chips and soda and so everybody they just had a big nobody was dancing or anything, but it was, you know, just kind of a big party. And then they made a big show of bringing out each person's Xbox, ringing up that person's purchase, and then taking the Xbox back into to the rear area because people couldn't really actually take possession of the Xboxes until 12:01. But the way they handled it, customer service wise, which was really smart, I thought.
How many Xboxes did they have there to sell? Did they have lots of them, or were they kind of in short supply?
I didn't get a count. It was a relatively limited quantity. I believe what happened was people were queued and then advised, okay, we have so many, so if you're, you know, past this point, you know, come back some other time. So everybody that was in the facility when I arrived, you know, had a claim to a machine. And then I'm always a little skeptical of anything somebody tells me, they told me, well, we sold out, with big excited looks on their faces, and I'm never sure if that's how much PR that is, but apparently they did completely sell out of what they had.
We talked about this last time, but last week, the day that the PS4 came out, I went to Costco and they had a pile of them, and they were readily available, the PS4. So I can imagine that this generation of consoles, there's not as much pent up demand or excitement around them as there was back when the 360 and the PS3 came out.
And I echo that. I was just kind of, I have memories of covering this, during the last two cycles, and I remember, people stampeding and they were camped out by the hundreds. And it was, game consoles were kind of a really, really big deal. They don't seem to be quite as big a deal this time around. And I sort of gauged that by the fact that queuing for the PlayStation 4 didn't really actually begin until the day of. Lines weren't really getting significant until the afternoon or the evening, which is different. Which is why I was a little shocked when I was at the Mall of America for the Verizon store opening, and I always out of habit just swing by the Apple and the Microsoft store. And when I arrived there, this was 2 days before the Xbox release. There was a very dedicated guy already camped out there, and I took some pictures of him and shot some video for a blog post. But I didn't expect that after what had happened with the PlayStation 4. it was one extra dedicated guy with really big blonde hair.
I was surprised because my son, who is just a hardcore gamer, he and I were talking about the Xbox, and I said, "Hey, the Xbox One." I said, "I just saw on one of the shows, one of the tech TV shows I was watching, that Twit shows that the Xbox One is not backwardly compatible." And he goes, "Oh yeah." I said, well, wait a minute. Doesn't that bother you? And he goes, "Dad, look, for them to move forward, they've got to leave the old behind." And I said, "Oh, that's an interesting perspective, because, the kid's got, dozens of games." And
what do you mean, keep the 360 around to play those
games? Exactly
games.
What he said. He goes, "Well, I'll just put the Xbox One on top of the Xbox 360.
Well, one thing, I was at the Mall of America last weekend, and at the Microsoft store, they had a Xbox One there, and there are people playing it. That thing is huge. I can't imagine putting that in my stack over by the TV.
Yeah, but it has the right color and shape to sort of slip into an entertainment center, though, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but it's just this enormous, very thick thing. It's a lot bigger than the 360 was. That was sort of a kind of a sleek design. This looks just like a huge gaming PC that they've just put together.
What always happens, though, is it never fails. The first time a console comes out, it's really big, but then then the next sub generations of that console always get smaller and smaller. The original Xbox 360 was pretty bulky, but the one my son has is really tiny little thing. Same thing happened with the PlayStation 2, the PlayStation 3. They keep miniaturizing. So that's probably what's going to happen with this too.
I haven't seen it in person. Is it as fugly as it is in the pictures?
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
I'm the wrong person to ask, because everybody does backflips over, how nice the Xbox, the HTC One smartphone is. And I hate phones that are overstyled. The Nexus 5 came out, and everybody was complaining about how generic it is, how nondescript it is. And that suits me fine, because it's just basically this simple, elegant black phone that just kind of fades into the background and makes you force it. Focus on the content, and so the new consoles are just they're sort of inconspicuous. They're big, but in terms of color and design, they're sort of inconspicuous. And I think that's perfect, particularly for the Xbox One, because that's largely intended to be a media center device as well as a gaming console.
Yeah, Well, hey, Julio, I don't know if you've heard of this, but speaking of devices, and I'm wondering about this, but there's a startup in here in the Twin Cities called AVU Media that has developed a TV-based system that lets senior citizens chat with doctors.
And interesting. No, I hadn't heard about that.
We'll put links in the show notes, but they're trying to raise 150 to 200K to finish their product development. And they already have a full-blown telemedicine system that they have. But this thing's going to be a set-top box that has a gigantic 1970s-like remote, and I'm assuming with big buttons that you press if you want it, and it'll automatically switch the input or something. But then they can make calls to their doctor. The doctor can call them, and it's $50 a month, which I think is a lot, unless, you know, it's a senior home or something. But I just met with the St. Paul Senior Workers Organization here this past Tuesday. And I got to tell you that all anybody talks about in the senior space is the fact that everyone's going to have to age in place, because there's just simply not going to be enough places for people to go. And so this virtual stuff's going to be huge.
What's it called, Dan?
Right.
It's AVU Media.
Yeah, there's a picture of both the remote and their interface and that Business Journal story. And what's kind of striking here is that, you know, they're delivering not only that telemedicine kind of, you know, video, Skype-like video conference, but email and music and pictures and all sorts of stuff. So they're trying to be a content, you know, over the TV air content sort of thing. Yep. Although this seems like it's more like a Roku kind of a deal where they're running off of a separate set-top box. But wouldn't a tablet app just do the same kind of thing and be a lot cheaper to develop? I don't know.
That's what I would think. But here's the kicker. The kicker is one of my clients did a prototype for rehabilitation centers for long-term care beds, because could you imagine, you know, being in traction for 3 or 4 months, laying in bed, looking at the ceiling? It sure would be nice to have a computer or a tablet or something else to look at. And one of the things that they were talking about was how they could A, have enough bandwidth, and B, have enough Wi-Fi throughput that if you had, you know, 50 long-term care beds and 50 people were watching a movie on Friday night, you know, could the Wi-Fi handle it? And the answer is no. But the kicker is that with the cable, they can have 1.5 gigabit per second throughput, theoretical throughput, of course, but it can handle it just fine. So a set-top box through the cable or anything connected through the cable, you know, using the, you know, a Moka box, one of those multimedia over cable alliance boxes. I've got 7 of them in the house here, and they work flawlessly. You know, something like that is perfect for an application like this. So yeah, the tablet wouldn't. But to your point, Tim, is that don't you think a Roku or an XBMC or something that you could write your own app for or write your own access for be good? Or does this have to be HIPAA compliant, so it's got to be secure and private?
It probably does.
Probably does.
Well, for some of the telemedicine applications, but you could certainly make a broader application, either in a tablet app or indeed make a like a Roku or Apple TV app that would be similar to this, I would think.
Yeah.
So, we'll keep an eye on it.
I would say they should go pitch Treehouse Health, Steve, if they're,
you know what, you're absolutely
they're
right.
They're raising money.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they should go to Treehouse Dash Health. They got a dash in their domain name too.
They do, actually.
Well, domain names are getting harder every day.
Yeah, they are.
Anyway, they should go pitch them. There's already 3 startups that are located in that incubator, accelerator kind of thing, innovation center, I guess they call it.
Well,
for healthcare, and they like the aging theme. You know, the aging in place theme is at least one startup in there. we talked about.
Exactly.
Yep, is in yep, that yep. space.
Yep,
so.
Yep, yep. Well, hey, Julio, as long as we've got you on the horn, the one thing that just came out, yesterday, was that the Star Tribune is going to be printing the Pioneer Press, that the P Press is going to outsource the printing piece to the Strib, which I think makes perfect sense. But what are your thoughts? Have you heard about this?
Well, it's not a popular topic among us union card carrying journalists at the Pioneer Press, because our union brothers, they're not guild newspaper guild, but they're Teamsters to a large extent. But you know, we're sitting here with our jaws on the floor, seeing all these people get canned right before the holidays.
Yes,
like 160 yeah. of them, right?
I didn't see that. Oh, geez. Okay.
Their jobs end in January, but you're getting the news right before the holidays. Yeah. Happy holidays to all. And so that kind of the efficiencies make sense. Although my first reaction as a journalist, apparently I was the only one that had this reaction in the whole Pioneer Press newsroom. It's like, wait a second, we're writing a story, and then our competition gets to see what we wrote before it comes out. Is that how it works?
Oh, yep. Yeah.
It's not as much of an issue, because anything we write, as soon as it's written, it gets thrown on the website. So that's not too much of an issue these days. But it was the classic, the mothership, the corporate offices, figuring out ways to save money. And if a whole bunch of people get thrown out of work, whatever. And that was, it's kind of an unpleasant situation to happen, given that our industry continues to be somewhat precarious, and you never know, down the road, what sharp turns are going to be taken that might, cause something similar to happen in the newsroom. So, It just, you never know what's going to happen. But it was, sort of pulling back objectively, in terms of efficiency, it does make sense, because you can get rid of this big building that you own. You got a lot of overhead. You have this other operation in town that can do it for you. Apparently, with all due respect to my colleagues, apparently this facility has better printing, better paper, better color reproduction. It won't make one lick of difference, when the paper comes out, what our deadlines are going to be. Yeah. In terms of economics, it makes sense. It really sticks in my craw that the human cost just really. Kind of makes me sad.
On the positive side here, Julio, though, it's they've inked a 5-year deal with the Strib to do the printing. Do you think that the Pioneer Press will be in print in 5 years?
They've been predicting the demise of the Pioneer Press for going on a quarter century now. As long as I've been at the paper, I've been at the paper for a good 25 years now. And as long as I've been there, they've been predicting the demise of the Pioneer Press. And so at this point, I've sort of given up really taking that kind of stuff very seriously. Eventually, print will fade out. But I think, very confident predictions of, print products, not being around in a half decade from now. I don't take those very seriously anymore. That said, the print Pioneer Press is it's pretty thin, puny compared to what it used to be, and more emphasis obviously is being placed on web content and so forth. Like they have, we've discussed this before. They have Pioneer Press reporters at this point really well trained to shoot tout videos with their iPhones, which is kind of what I did last night at the Microsoft store. So it's more and more digital, but I think newspapers have a way to go.
One of the things in this Twin Cities business story where they announced this was something about a new subscription model that looks like you pay for your subscription to the Pioneer Press and you get access to the other digital first media properties. Is that the way it's going to work?
I don't have all the details on that, but the whole paywall issue has been raging in our newsroom, you know, for a while now, sort of under wraps. You know, David Brower, our good media writer, has had, you know, he's had like little hints and sniffs of this, but he never had the full story, and it's just it's been an interesting situation because at one point Digital First Media was rabidly anti-paywall, which is very interesting, and then apparently reality set in and, you know, people realize we need something, you know, something like this, and it gets really clumsy. Like now every Pioneer Press reporter has to like sign into this website and create this special account just so that they can access their own product at the paper, and that account is IP address specific, so you can only do it in the newsroom. You can't do it at home. It gets a little crazy. But I guess the economics are sort of forcing newspapers' hands more and more these days.
Well, the good news though is that Minnesota's jobless rate hit its lowest point in nearly 6 years, and then Graham added to the show notes here. But then it's a non-story. BS. Yeah, because why, Graham?
Because the numbers of the job, or the, what do they call it, the job participation rate, or the, you know, the declining labor force participation rate is what's stated in the next breath. So
yeah.
Does but anybody, you know, really pay attention to that anymore? I mean, come on.
Well, here's what I've been trying to figure out. I've been trying to figure out what is really happening with the shift towards free agency.
A lot is happening.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting was, I'll try to find this post, but I read a post by a guy that was talking about co-working and all that. I think I sent it to Don Ball at Coco MSP, but, the post was about all of the tools that are available for free to make yourself look like you're an actual professional who's got a shingle hung out. And how to use them so that you don't look like you're using an AOL.com email address from, you know, 1997, how to use your own domain name, yada, yada, yada. And it was a pretty interesting article, but it was all about being a free agent and how, what you need to do, what are table stakes to be in the game.
Yep.
So,
and there are a lot of people doing it. That is for sure.
Yeah.
It amazes me to this day. You know, it just keeps happening so often. I get pitches from PR people who have Hotmail email addresses, and it's just, come on.
I know. It's like, what?
But one interesting side note, the Pioneer Press, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, the Pioneer Press went Google. They switched over to
right.
To Gmail, and it sort of hooks into what you're talking about, because the tools now to look professional are so, you know, they're inexpensive or, you know, often free. And I was one of the few people, you know, most people were kind of pissed off about this because there was a lot of change for them at the Pioneer Press. But I've been like lobbying this for years, and now, you know, now that we have Google at the paper, and that's, you know, it works exactly the same way as my own Google Apps account. You know, I'm so happy because now I can be productive, have the same level of efficiency and productivity in the office as I do at home, as I do on the road. You know, before I could not work properly because Outlook web access was so crappy and so forth. It's just I've been moving, you know, towards this bright future where, you know, the location does not determine your level of efficiency, and you can work anywhere. And it's been fantastic to be able to have that, you know, for, you know, my, as in my Pioneer Press incarnation, I just love it. There's this Mac app called Mailplane, which is basically kind of a specialized web browser, but then it, you know, it gives you little tabs for all your Gmail accounts. And I'm using that now. I used to use it kind of for fun, but now it's become this very indispensable tool because I have Gmail, you know, for all my various work incarnations. And this is, you know, this is the future. I've also gotten paperless. I'm kind of OCD, so I hate clutter, and I've trained myself to the point where I have no paper at work. Sometimes I'll print out stuff when I'm writing a story, but I have this ironclad rule. At the end of the day, if there's any paper on my desk, it goes straight into the trash. And so it kind of amazes me how the way I worked has changed over the last couple of decades. And so any services, any tools that emerge to help other people do that are a huge boon, because people really need to learn this stuff. It's very important.
Well, I'll tell you, we use an app, you know, it's just little things like this that change workflow so dramatically. We use an app on our iPhones and iPads called Scanner Pro. And there are analogous apps for Android. But what we can do, for example, is take a photo of a check and turns it into a PDF, and you can immediately upload it into a Dropbox. And we've got a shared Dropbox for the company with, you know, subfolders, subdirectories that are by month, and stuff goes in there. And so then we're not printing anything, and our bookkeeper just looks in that Dropbox to see what new scanned documents are in there, and we're good to go. And so, yeah, it's becoming so simple that Say, let's talk for a second, if we could, because I know that a lot of people are talking about Android KitKat, and I was at the Best Buy store, as I mentioned, last Sunday, and as I was, you know, I picked up my stuff, and as I was wandering around, poking around a little bit, here was on an end cap, a 21-inch Acer Android desktop with a mouse and a keyboard. And I looked at it and went, what? And I started playing with it, you know, clicking on apps and launching them and so forth. And I thought, oh my God, this is fabulous. And of course, it made me scratch my head wondering about why someone would use a Chromebook. This thing was $360, and
Steve, you lost me. Is it Android or is it Chrome OS?
It's Android.
Okay.
And it's a touch screen, but it also has a mouse and a keyboard, and it's a 21-inch display. And wow. It just blew me away. I mean, I looked at that and went, oh my God. You know, this would be, you know, it's still a little bit, you know, too expensive for an impulse purchase. But I thought, you know, man, this is pretty interesting.
I don't know if Android is enough for a full laptop sort of operating system.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you know, if you were to compare it, you know, if you were in the market for a Chromebook, for example, not that you would. You know, you're comparing apples to oranges because one's a laptop configuration, one's a desktop. But, you know, if you were going in that direction, then why would you not look at Android, for example? Now, granted, I think the Chromebook is cool because you can have multiple tabs across and everything is right there at your fingertips.
Well, and you've got a full desktop browser, though. So it's a different proposition than a mobile browser.
It is.
And mobile apps. I would prefer to see those two things merged, where you could have an Android mode, perhaps in Chrome OS, where you could run some Android apps. But for the most part, I'm finding that Chrome OS is perfectly usable and has all the apps that you need to get work done.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, you were testing some Chromebooks that I lent you. What was your ultimate verdict on those?
You know, for the same reason that I wouldn't get an 11-inch MacBook Air, the 11-inch Chromebooks were just too small for me. Mm-hmm. I did like the HP quite a bit. The build quality was quite good. The screen was really good. But what I didn't like was the last year's processor was it's an ARM processor, and it's just not as snappy as the Acer was, which has the Haswell processor. Plus, the battery life was about half. So the size would have been a problem for me. But I ended up with a 14-inch Chromebook 14, the new HP, which is actually, I think, pretty nice.
You bought it?
Yeah. The screen is not quite as good as the on the 11, but it's better than that Acer. It does have the Haswell processor, so you get the crazy battery life. I think it's rated at something like 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And it's a little heavy, but other than that, I think it meets my needs quite well.
And where did you buy it, and how much was it?
They're available on Amazon. They're also starting to become available at Walmart, of all places. The Walmart version has T-Mobile 4G built in as well. So that is, I think it's $350 for that one. The Wi-Fi only version is $200 or $300. It's
$299.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
yeah, some interesting things are happening with Chromebooks that are kind of surprising me. The paper, the Pioneer Press, for instance. I don't know if I might have triggered this a little bit because I wrote a post about how I speculated our organization going Google might trigger some interesting changes down the road, such as our newsroom sort of getting rid of the clunky old Windows laptops that they issue out to reporters when they go out on mobile assignments and switching over to Chromebooks. But what surprised me is the enthusiasm to which my colleagues have been embracing Chromebooks. It's somewhat unexpected. Like Ben Garvin, our star photographer, he picked up an HP for his wife, who loves it. Chris Snowbeck, a fellow business reporter who covers medicine, he was getting really tired of the clunky, this huge Windows laptop that he's been carrying around for years. And he came over to my desk and he had this like quizzical look on his face. And then he was like, Chromebooks, what's Chromebooks? What's up with Chromebooks? And Tim had, I had just returned the HP that I lent him. And so I had that handy. And so I just, handed it over to Chris Snowbeck and let him use it for a while. And, he was totally sold on it. I was buying one for himself. And, Google predicted all of this when the whole Chromebook concept came out. I had conversations with the people on that team, at the Googleplex, and they were telling me, they were spinning this tale, and I literally remember sitting in my chair at the Pioneer Press, sort of leaning back, kind of rolling my eyes silently, what are these guys smoking? And it's all happening. It's really quite amazing. Web apps are becoming so powerful. The Google Plus photo editing is almost unbelievable. We're getting to the point where you can just have this web device and do almost anything you want just right on the web, and it's quite amazing.
Well, I've been really amazed by how I can't go without a connection anymore. I have the Verizon iPad 3 and I'm going to get the new iPad Air. And so I was looking at that and then thinking, well, maybe I don't have to get a Verizon. I'll just get a Wi-Fi only. And then I realized how many times I'm in situations where I have to have connectivity and, getting on Wi-Fi is not an option. So
that's a very good point. Last night, for instance, I was at the Microsoft store. I shot some video of the event there, and I needed to upload it and say, okay. And I was like, okay, no problem. Get on the Microsoft Store Wi-Fi network. And for some reason, that was painfully slow. So I went to Plan B. Okay, no problem. Switch over to the Apple Store Wi-Fi network. The Apple Store is right across the hall there. No problem. That didn't work either. And then it suddenly dawned on me, I have this iPad with Verizon LTE. But activated the hotspot mode on that, and I was off to the races. It's really, it's amazing.
Well, one of the things that I just wanted to talk about a little bit, and Tim, you stuck in the show notes, was about Apple's iBeacon.
Mm.
And, that it didn't get a lot of play at the Worldwide Developers Conference from press. You know, not a lot of people blogged about it either. You know, I'm sure part of that's you have to sign an NDA while you're there. But they just did a deal with Shopkick, Tim.
Yeah, they have.
And so these iBeacons are little devices that you can place in the store, which uses the Bluetooth Low Energy on the phone. So when you walk in and you're going to sign in with Shopkick, it happens automatically. And then this thing lets you do what? Flag items you want and alert you in store to offers on those products and others you might like.
Huh? Right. So it's integrated with the Shopkick apps. So this is Shopkick's, you know, kind of implementation of iBeacon.
Got it.
I think that you're going to see a lot of other implementations. In fact, I would expect to see some proprietary ones that people like Target and Best Buy would do, by themselves using iBeacon, because it's very powerful. And this is going to be something that'll be really big next year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, again, you know, it's the holy grail for marketers and retailers to be able to connect with customers as they come in the store and, you know, cross sell and upsell to them.
Well, this is a little, it gets to the, on the creepy side though. So they're walking a fine line. You don't want it to look like, Minority Report where they scan your eyeball and, you know, they know it's you. So they start changing all of the ads.
Or you walk down the hallway and the big displays talk to you in person.
Hello, Mr. Right. Anderton. Yeah. are you aware of the iBeacon's local angle?
No.
No.
What's that? The nerdery, how the nerdery always likes to play with the latest stuff and sort of kick the tires on it. They have a big iBeacon experiment going. They just sent me a long page or blog post or something that they wrote on, and having worked my way through it. But you know the nerdery guys, they get really excited about this stuff, and so I'm in the process of sort of evaluating what they're doing to maybe write a story or a blog post about that. So you should check it out. They're quite excited about it. Apparently, there's no in the wild iBeacon implementation anywhere in the Twin Cities, but department stores are doing it. Major League Baseball apparently is embracing it. I think they're going to start with San Francisco. But when Major League Baseball does the stuff, they relatively quickly deploy it to all their stadiums. So Target Field. I would hazard a guess that we're going to have that this coming summer. So.
Well, here's the one thing that does disturb me a little bit about this ShopBeacon from Shopkick using the iBeacon technology. ShopBeacon can welcome a shopper when she enters a store and show her location-specific deals, discounts, recommendations, and rewards without her having to remember to open the app. Mm. And so, you know, that's...
I would imagine you'd have to say when you first install it that you're going to allow... notifications.
Right.
I mean, most apps that I install, I say, no, I don't want notifications.
So do
I. Because you'll just have nothing but notifications all day. So yeah, if you do that, then you're going to see notifications as soon as you walk in because it hits your Bluetooth and, you have to be running Bluetooth as well. But it hits it and then it can push information to you on a personal basis because it knows it's you.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, my wife and daughter love this stuff. And my daughter's the one who convinced my wife to sign up for Shopkick and check in everywhere. And my wife now is to the point where almost everything we buy online, well, let me sidestep. Everything we buy online, she insists that I go through the Ebates gateway. She goes, oh, did you go through the Ebates gateway? No.
So you get credit for that?
We get credit for that. Now, you know, I always kind of tease her a little bit about how she's doing all this stuff with deals and all that kind of stuff. Last Christmas, we had something like 70,000 points that we could use. And we got, you know, iTunes cards and we got all kinds of stuff. We bought a a small HD TV and, you know, got all this, didn't buy it. We got used points for it, all because of points. And of course she's getting anywhere from 2 to 5% back on all these, just about everything she buys online, because she goes through the Ebates gateway first.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't pay attention to a lot of this stuff, but boy, I'll tell you what, she is the queen of deals. So if she starts to pay attention to something like this, then I do too. Because otherwise she gets mad at me. You paid full price? What are you, nuts?
So, yeah, my wife never pays full price or anything.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyway.
But it's a little bit like Google notifications on iOS. They've just gone. They used to have to be able to used to have to open the app in order to be able to use Google Now. But now it's gone, you know, it's gone system level, like on Android, and you know, this information that's being thrown out of you is now, it's now getting to the point where it's like breathing, you know, it's just always there.
Yeah. Well, and also there was a big deal about Apple's new Apple Store app for the iPad. And I downloaded it last night, and it was very interesting, but I will come back to something I mentioned before. I buy a lot at B&H Photo in New York, and they've always had this enormous, gigantic catalog that weighs like 47 pounds. And this thing shows up, and I always page through it, but I don't really buy off of it. You know, I'll toss it and recycle. And so I opted out of getting in the catalog, and I downloaded the iPad catalog, and the B&H catalog is one of the best apps I've ever used on the iPad. It's phenomenal. You guys really seriously should just check it out. And I mean, just the way it is in terms of drilling down on product and being able to search for things and so forth. I really think they set the bar high, and nobody's really talked about it very much. I haven't seen reviews of it. So,
yeah, you normally don't see reviews of stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, of store apps.
Right.
I mean, I've not seen a review of, say, the one from Target, Carousel, which is also quite innovative. I'm not sure why. Mm. Why is that?
You know, I don't know. I haven't used it. So
what is the Target thing?
It's called Carousel, and it's sort of a game sort of thing, but it delivers discounts to you. You sign in with your Facebook login, and then all your Facebook friends, you sort of compete with to who gets the best deals, or who
you're talking, you know, about Cartwheel?
Who saves the most money. Yeah.
You're talking about Cartwheel?
Right. Correct.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Did you I just story on that and I just missed it?
I hadn't heard about it. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, interesting. Well, yeah,
that's worth checking out.
We should probably.
You guys, we might be running out of time, but just quickly, what did you guys think of the Verizon store?
Yeah, we
kind of. I haven't been there yet, but it looks interesting.
Yeah, we kind of covered that. We talked about being there, you know, and some of the things that they did and the value added that they needed to do, and. I thought you did a great job covering it for TwinCities.com, putting a lot of stuff in there. And I'm always amazed that you and I, because you and I were both there, Julio, and we can be in the same place and have two completely different perspectives and see different things, which I think is great.
I had my moment of envy. I was like, hey, why didn't I get to talk to the CIO? What's the deal here? Yeah.
Oh. Well, but
I did talk to the guy in charge of the design studio who sort of was in charge of the you know, just the design approach, the aesthetics and so forth, and had a fascinating conversation, because it's this guy, you know, I was there in my Steve Jobsian jeans and turtleneck, and he was this guy with his fancy suit with the pocket square and the perfect hair. And And yeah, I had this, you know, fascinating conversation about design with him. But my bottom line with the store is just that there isn't much originality. Everything in there has sort of been ripped off from somebody else. So, but it's for a shopper, for a tech shopper like myself, it's great, because they have they have killer inventory, killer selection of products.
Yeah, they do.
Looking for cases and things. It's great. And I did a little experiment with their little thing in the back where they will emblazon a custom image you provide onto an iPhone case. And you know, that's kind of cool, except it's a little buggy. It took, you know, literally a few days for my case to actually be produced, so they need to work out a few kinks, but it's a great idea.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it ends up doing for them, but I thought it was pretty neat.
A fellow business writer, I'm not sure when this was, he wrote a story which was a little astute. He sort of noted that the Mall of America is chock-a-block with brand stores, brands that set up their own stores at the Mall of America, stores that do not exist in that form anywhere else. They're just at the Mall of America to push a brand.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch of stores like that don't exist like that anywhere else, or might, you know, also exist, you know, in very key locations like Chicago's Michigan Avenue, like Verizon's right, going to have one of those over there. But there's an increasing trend towards brands creating physical incarnations of themselves in crucial locations to sort of, you know, tell that story in a way you wouldn't find in a normal mall. So I find that interesting. Verizon is doing exactly that. And that's what Apple and Microsoft did with their stores too.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yep. Well, the one other thing that we just have to touch on today is November 22nd and is the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination. And I was just reading an article about the Zapruder family and about Abraham Zapruder taking this film and of the assassination. And he sold it for $150,000, but then gave $25,000 to the widow of J.D. Tippit. And I never knew that. And I also didn't know that over the life of Abraham Zapruder, the family, they licensed the film and grossed $838,000. And now by Time Life, it's been put into the public domain and was purchased by the government for $16 million. So that's just amazing. But what if that assassination had happened today? I mean, imagine everybody with their smartphones and camcorders and everything. We'd have like, you know, 8,000 views of Dealey Plaza.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
it would just be.
And then also there would be security webcams all over the place too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Wow. Have you guys used the Moto X? Because one of the things that I thought was interesting at that Verizon store is they had every one of the colors laid out across a table. And the Moto X, it just feels good in your hand. It feels like a really good phone. And I'm not in the market for an Android phone, but have you guys used that device?
I have. Yeah, I have one. It's funny that you say that. Everybody is saying that there's a design, a nameless design genius somewhere who just did something brilliant. He created a phone that just feels friendly. It feels good in your hand. It has a curve in the back. The texture is perfect. You can customize the colors. They did a really brilliant thing because the specs on the phone are not particularly impressive. It's not a very cutting edge device in terms of, you know, raw technology, but as a friendly little phone that you're just going to love to use, they executed that very nicely. I don't know that it made a whole ton of difference because I don't think the Model X has done very well in the marketplace, and they're coming out with a cheaper G version now, but. I'm in the process of thinking up a post in which I'm going to compare the Nexus 5 and the Moto X, sort of compare and contrast, you know, with the hypothetical of which one would I buy, because these just happen to be my favorite Android phones at the moment. And I'm sort of getting to the point in my head where I totally get the Moto X, absolutely, because it's just a fantastic, just the it has some shortcomings, but the advantages and the pleasures of using it just vastly outweigh the minuses, and I really love it. Although the customization is completely lost on me because I only get my gadgets in, 100% black. So
yeah. All right. Hey, Julio, I'm really glad you could join today.
No problem. I was not expecting to be awake, but what often happens with when I'm covering these interesting stories is the adrenaline kicks in, and even if I go to bed like really late, my enthusiasm forces me to wake up at the normal time. So
yeah. Well, there really aren't a lot of upcoming events that we haven't already talked about. So thanks everybody for listening to the Minivate Gang podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, baby.